Viktor Frankl said, "Everything can be taken from a man but one thing, the last of the human freedoms. To choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's way." This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson. Stay tuned for the next hour as Sue explores the human psyche, what makes us tick, and how to live better, more fulfilled, and more meaningful lives. Only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson on the Finding Human program, and my guest today is Denise Mortlock, and we're both sitting in the studio, and Craig's keeping us on air. Hannah Smith is also going to be not joining us. She's out of range to be able to be on the air, but I have got quite a few answers from her of questions that I posed. Now, Denise and I didn't actually know each other, but we met on the telephone when she came back from Israel. Denise has done unbelievable work as a volunteer, initially in Swaziland, and in Eswatini, is that right?
Eswatini.
And she is hoping to go back to Israel to also go and help in the mental health crisis there. She's run unbelievable groups all over for people battling with emotional disorders, quite honestly, right now in Israel, she's really going to be needed. Now, a message came through for you, Denise, from Sarah Goodman. Uh-huh. And it says, and my listeners, I know many of you remember Sarah Goodman. She's been on my program a few times. Here it is. "Dear Denise, hope you're well. We do miss you. How lovely to talk to Sue Jackson. Enjoy and come and visit us again in Israel. Lots of love and regards from your friends here." Now, tell me about how you came to be in Israel. First of all, one of the questions that I did pose to you was, when did it start, your longing to go to Israel?
Probably from when I was around 16 years old. I'd always wanted to go and work on a kibbutz in Israel. And then life happens, and children and jobs and marriages and whatever. So 50 years later, when I was 66, then I got the opportunity to go.
And how did you manage to? You were telling me just now about what you were asked to get in order to become a volunteer. Just go tell everyone, will enjoy hearing your story there.
Well, I had just put it on the. I sent an email to the Israeli government to begin with. They had a drop down box for volunteers, so I sent an email asking what I could do to help. And then thought, oh, well, I'll never get a response. But in a few days, I got a response saying that they no longer run the volunteers program, but they had forwarded my email to the organization that does. And I thought, my goodness, to even get a response, I just about fell off my chair.
Yeah.
And then I was contacted by those people, and then they asked me to send in a CV.
You're going to get back to that, because I like that part too. Diskim Wellness Clinic for Adults offers convenient and professional care to help you manage health risks. Whether you're having your regular wellness checks, such as blood pressure or cholesterol, Diskim Wellness Clinics offers you a broad range of health screening services, including female health screening with pap smears, family planning, and pregnancy screening. Fast, affordable, and with care, find your nearest Diskim Wellness Clinic inside. Diskim Pharmacy's Better Health starts here.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
When it comes to saving money on medicine prices every day, Diskim Pharmacies is your first choice. Not only do we charge preferred dispensing fees, but our wide range of cost-saving generics comply with your medical aids rules to help your benefits go further. We'll take care of all your scripts, repeats, and even send you script reminders. Our dedicated pharmacists and nurses are here to guide you. Step into a world where your health truly matters. Diskim Pharmacies. Better health starts here.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue, and I'm back with Denise Mortlock. And if you'd like to join our conversation, please WhatsApp us on 061-895-1019. Denise was a volunteer in Israel, and very interesting time that she had there. We'll be listening to that now. If anyone wants to know more about the volunteering, they can also ask Denise. Denise, so tell me, what else did the, what would you call them, the ministers of giving your visas? What else did they want from you as for working there in Israel?
Well, unfortunately, or fortunately, I don't know how to put it. So I had applied on the 28th of September, and then the 7th of October happened. And then, so the rules were changed, and then our South African government took the Israeli government to court, which caused even more problems with trying to get a visa to go there. And then Al cancelled flights to Johannesburg. So as far as I was trying to make plans to get the visa and get a flight and do all the necessary paperwork for the applications, it was becoming like a bridge too far and a bridge too far. But I just persevered. And then when it came, the requirement was one of the requirements for my parents' birth certificates, unabridged birth certificates. And I was like, my parents are long dead. All I can supply is their death certificates. And it was also the unabridged birth certificates of my siblings.
Oh, my word.
So when I finally arrived at the visa application center in Pretoria, I had a lever arch file of documents of everything I could think of, including my television license and my dogs and cats rabies certificates for any event. And then the lady at the desk was like, why are you bringing all this stuff? It's not required. And I was like, oh, I've just covered every eventuality.
Months of it, I'm sure.
And then she said, you need your, where is your airplane ticket? And I was like, I haven't bought a ticket because I don't know if I'll get a visa. So she allowed me to buy the ticket there and then online.
Good heavens.
And then she also said, but where's your letter of invitation from the facility you're going to? So I quickly had to phone them in Jerusalem, and they sent the email, and then this lady at the counter allowed me to print it and present it. So it was just the most random things happening.
Well, I must admit, you must have been very keen on getting to Israel in order to go through all of that. So the 55 years were worth waiting.
Yeah, God will let you wander around and do your own thing, but he'll keep you to your promise.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Denise, what religion are you?
I'm a Christian.
And what was your reason for wanting to go to Israel? You said that you wanted to work on a kibbutz. How did you even know about all of that?
So from reading, you know, back in the day, it was Anne Frank, before Anne Frank, reading her books at the school library. But also my mother is Jewish.
Oh, okay. So,
but we weren't brought up, my father wasn't Jewish. So when my mother would tell us stories of her mother, I always remember making eats for the men coming back from shul, and how she, her sisters would send her to go and steal all of those out of the pantry. And then one day her mother put dog food in the, the snacks. And when the girls ate it, they were like, do you know what you're eating?
Oh, no.
So she would tell me these stories, but it made no impression on me. She was the youngest of her family. I'm the youngest in my family. But now I so regret that I didn't ask more questions, didn't find out more. Where did her parents come from? How did she even land up? She was born in Dundee. And I'm hoping one of your listeners is in Dundee and can go and I've been to the Jewish cemetery in Dundee and found their graves. But I would love to go back, or if somebody lives there, to go and take photos of my family's graves. Because that's quite a big thing in Israel, that you have photos of your Jewish family's graves.
Absolutely. And what was their surname?
Reif. And please don't ask me, I can't remember if it's R-I-E-F or R-E-I-F.
Okay, so if anyone's in Dundee and is prepared to go to the cemetery there, it would be a big help to Denise. Now, Denise, when you got there, you were given a post at the Beit Bath in Jerusalem, which is a facility. I read what they said to you about it. The facility of we are an assisted living for seniors called Beit Bath, located in Jerusalem. We have 85 residents living in our home. Many of them are Holocaust survivors. Every year we have two foreign volunteers that come to volunteer in our home for 1 to 2 years and help us in many areas with our residents. We've interviewed and been in contact with Denise Mortlock and are eagerly waiting for her to come volunteer in our home starting in June 2024 until May 2025. And possibly for another year after that. We provide accommodation, food, and pocket money to our foreign volunteers. That's nice. They become a part of our home. So I want you to tell me about your experiences. I just wanted to see. Oh, here we are. There is a message that's come through for you. What was her mother's maiden name? It's not difficult to find genealogical records. Just hang on, I've just knocked the speaker over. So she says it's not difficult to find genealogical records. I'm not on the radio now, but she's welcome to contact me. Have you got her phone number by any chance? Please send your phone number if you don't mind. Thanks so much for getting back to us. Right, I'm with Denise Mortlock, and we were talking about when she got to Beit Bath and what it was. Tell me about your experience there, because you told me one story just now about a celebration, and you went to the roof.
Yes, the management had organized a family day for the residents, and I was walking around in the garden because they had climbing, and they had a man demonstrating snakes and whatever, and they had popcorn machines and pizzas and magicians, and it was just such a fun event with all these children running in every direction. And then I went up onto my favorite place on the rooftop of the, because it was a three-store facility, and I just stood and looked down, and I was like, I am looking at a miracle. These residents shouldn't actually be alive. They shouldn't have survived what they survived. And now to be in this facility and invite their children, their grandchildren, some cases their great-grandchildren, and to watch these over 500 children running in every direction, having the most marvelous time in the middle of Jerusalem, it was very humbling.
And what an amazing sight that must have been. And you were actually there after the 7th of October. Mm-hmm. And what did you find? How was the atmosphere at the time?
When I arrived in Jerusalem, mm-hmm. You know, those people are so incredibly resilient. I was lying in my bed one night when the sirens went off. I didn't take any notice, and then I could hear the security man announcing something, but it was all in Hebrew, so I was just carried on reading my book. And then my youngest son phoned me and he said, "Where are you? Because we're watching live TV, the missiles coming in from Iran." So I said, "Oh, that's what all the fuss is about." So when I went out of my room, then I found a group of the very elderly ladies sitting, you know, in one of the safe areas. The synagogue downstairs and the physiotherapy department were the safe places to go for the facility. However, a lot of people can't get that far that quickly, the ladies in wheelchairs or with walkers or whatever. So they were sitting on the steps in the safe area, so I went and joined them.
Okay, on the steps.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson, and I'm back with Denise Mortlock. And we were going to actually be including Hannah in this, but I think we're just going to go on the two of us chatting for now, and then I'll either ask Hannah to come back to me or come and visit me here in the studio. Okay, Denise, so you got there, you were in Jerusalem. Did you make friends outside of the Beit Bath?
Yes, I did.
Tell me about how you made friends.
So part of my duties, first thing in the morning, were to go to the Machlaka, I think it's frail care unit, to help feed people who couldn't feed themselves. And there I would meet the physiotherapists, occupational therapists, speech therapists, whoever, who would come from outside of the facility to come and work with those residents in the Machlaka. So I made friends with them, and that's where I got to get invited to their homes, go to eat in a sukkot, do all those just amazingly wonderful things that, I just had the most marvelous time in Jerusalem and Tel Aviv.
Were they all Jewish, or was it a mixture of people helping there?
No, mainly Jewish.
And because I know that you did say that the Palestinian workers were incredibly kind to the aged people. Tell me about them.
Yes, they are. And as fast as the Jewish people were trying to teach me Hebrew, the Palestinians would be trying to teach me Arabic. And I was always so nervous that I would say the wrong thing to the wrong group of people. And then I did an online course in Hebrew with a young lady. She was based in Jaffa. And so she would teach me stuff or teach the group stuff. And then she would say, now you need to go and practice it. So in the afternoons when I would set up the tea and coffees, then I thought, oh, well, this is the perfect opportunity to practice my street Hebrew.
Yeah.
And the ladies were horrified, and they were like, Denise, who's teaching you this gutter language? And then I had to realize, you know, the people in Jerusalem are very different from the people in Tel Aviv, Yafo.
Yeah.
So to be careful what you say to who and where you're saying it.
That is so funny, actually. And so you actually stayed then at Beit Bath. Is that where you were accommodated there as well when you said when the sirens went off, you were in your room there?
Yes.
Were you staying there all the time?
Yes, which was a great help. Well, then they could use me as well for in the evenings on Shabbat if someone needed to be taken to the hospital. Because on Shabbat, everybody switches their phones off, which is why what contributed a great deal to the Nova Festival tragedy. So then I would go with Magen David Adom in the ambulance. It was just the most amazing experience. Those are incredible people who work for that organization. And the way they treat those aged people is just on a different level. And then especially when I would show them the ID card that says they're a Holocaust survivor, then the care and the attention just goes to a different level. It is so humbling. And then I would just stay with whoever was needing attention until a family member picked up the phone after Shabbat and switched on the phone and saw the message to come to the hospital. So they just needed somebody with them until a family member could come. Or if it was 2 o'clock in the morning, for the family to come from wherever, it takes a while to get to Sarah Sadak or...
So you would stay with them until their family arrived.
Yes. And sometimes, I mean, you know, there's no, like in the beginning, I didn't know a word of Hebrew, but it makes no difference. If you're holding someone's hand, it doesn't matter what language you're speaking.
It's so true. It really is. And you bought that book, Hebrew for Dummies.
The receptionist actually found it on a bench. You know, in Jerusalem, any bench would have a couple of books there for you to sit and read. And she came back with it and she said, I think, Denise, this is perfect for you. And, of course, we all screamed with delight that I would walk around with Hebrew for Dummies.
And it's a thick book, never mind. Now, you are hoping to go back there again. And when would you like to go back? I mean, right now, I'm sure you thought by now the war would be over. Does it shock you that it isn't?
It's horrendous. It's just horrendous. You know, when I went to Hostage Square in Tel Aviv, And they have a mock tunnel. I don't know if
I went into that.
So just speaking to those family members, and then it was also a day when they were letting off the balloons or sending up these big bunches of balloons for people's birthdays or just honoring them.
And the orange balloons were going up as well for the little children.
Well, that was, so in Hostage Square, they have that long table set for Shabbat meal. And then in the center is the table set for the two Bibas children. That was before the remains were returned. So you just looking at that is already, you know, I think I told you, it's like going to Yad Vashem. Same, you feel like you are never going to walk upright again, that weight on your shoulders. And then walking through that tunnel and thinking that this is where these hostages are being kept, but probably even way worse conditions. And for how many days, it's just unthinkable. I had to actually go and sit down and just have a cup of coffee, and I didn't want to speak to anybody. I just wanted to, I don't know what I was trying to do, but it's just unspeakable.
And you went to the Nova Festival site as well.
Yes, during my leave from volunteering, I joined another volunteering organization, and we went down in the Gaza envelope, which is on the border of Gaza, as they say there, and helped pack lettuce in a big packing house, and because there's so many workers missing and fighting on the borders, so they're desperate for volunteers to go and help with in the agricultural sector. And then on the way back, we stopped at the Nova Festival. And that, again, was, there are no words. I can't think of words to describe that place.
So you must have seen all the cars, also that car graveyard that's there from all the cars that were left. Absolutely heartbreaking. But, you know, did you know anything, or did you know a lot about the Holocaust before you went?
Yes.
You did?
Yes.
How did you learn about the Holocaust?
Also from school and in the library, and I had the most wonderful library teacher, and she would find these books for me because she realized this is where my interests lay. And then she would say to me, have you read this, and let me show you this, and let me get this from the head office, library department, whatever. So, yes, I did know a lot about the Holocaust.
And, I mean, it's amazing that you then went to go and work at Beit Bath, where there were so many Holocaust survivors. Did any of them tell you their stories?
Yes. And so part of my duties were to go and visit people in their units, people who couldn't get out for whatever reason and just needed some company in their rooms. And somebody years before had written each person's story. So, but it was all in Hebrew. It was this beautiful book in Hebrew of each person's story. And this lady would kindly sit and translate for me sentence by sentence from Hebrew to English so that I could understand these, especially the ones that I was serving lunch to. So I would listen to the story and then go down to the dining room and serving lunch. You know, it's very different reading a person's story, but when you talk to them in person, it's a whole different experience. And a lot of them who couldn't even speak English. But how it changed my attitude, that I am serving you, who, and I've now heard your story, and that it's indescribable honor and privilege I have of serving you your marak off or marak whatever.
I'll take your word for that one. You know, Mahatma Gandhi said the best way to find yourself is in the service of others. Would you say that that's true?
Absolutely.
Did you find different parts of yourself when you were in Israel?
Absolutely. I went there to volunteer and help and do whatever. The person who got the most help was me.
And I must admit, every time I go to Israel, I feel my own soul almost reconnecting with myself every time I go. Did you go to the Western Wall at all, to the Kotel?
Oh, absolutely. And the most amazing thing is that once a year, that facility organizes a big bus, big fancy bus that comes and picks up anybody who wants to go. Doesn't matter if you're in a wheelchair or walker or whatever. And then the police actually stop the traffic so that that bus can get right into the hotel, you know,
oh,
on the
wow.
plaza.
Yeah?
And this bus reverses right onto that plaza so that the people can easily access, you know, the ladies go one side and the men go the other. So that was just one of the most amazing things, to go with these people right there. And then on our way back, we're coming up, you know, you come out of Dungate and up, there was a full moon.
Oh.
A full moon was coming up over the Mount of Olives.
Oh, how beautiful.
You know, that word gobsmacked, that was me, gobsmacked. Like after this amazing experience, there is God putting that full moon above the Mount of Olives.
Wow, that must have been absolutely beautiful. You know that you sent me something that Sarah had said to you when you were leaving, and I printed it out and I wanted to read it to you. Now, where did I put it? Here we are, I think. No, I will find it. It's right here. Yeah. Sarah Goodman said this about Denise Mortlock, because I'd asked Denise, what was your relationship like working with the people there? And she said it was very, very special. And Sarah, in her farewell speech, said it was in the dining room, and this was the 12th of March, 2025. I've been asked to say a few words to Denise in English to thank her for her help. I don't know where to begin. From your first days, we all realized that here was a very special lady. You had come to help, and wow, did you help. Always gracious, with a smile, helping people according to their needs. In our dining room, or at our 4 o'clock tea, or in the machlaka, If so, this was what I would call the frail care unit. You said that just now with the tea. Wherever you were needed, Denise was there. She also escorted people who had to get to an appointment, perhaps to a dentist, and needed a hand. Now, Denise, I have a little gift for you from our tenants. What's special about this is it's made in Israel, not China or India. I need to explain that in Hebrew, we all wish you good health and success in all your future endeavors. A big, big thank you from all of us. And this letter was this was what Sarah said to you, and she sent back a present with you for me as well, which was two hand towels that she had crocheted hooks onto. And I love them. I use them. I'm going to be using them over Rosh Hashanah as well. It's wonderful. Now, you went from Israel. We're going to go back to Israel, but I was just wondering the difference for you, because this year we were supposed to meet earlier, and I'd got back from Israel, and I got COVID, and then you went off to America. What was a huge difference for you? Were you volunteering in America as well?
Going to America after Israel was like... Again, you're going from the most holy place on the planet to Sodom and Gomorrah.
Oh, is that so? Is it as bad as that?
Well, especially when I went to Las Vegas, 36 hours in Las Vegas, and I was standing there thinking, not even a month ago, I was standing at the Kotel in Jerusalem, and here, God, now you place me on the 21st floor of the Planet Hollywood, looking down at the Bellagio Hotel, the fountains. That place is next level. But I mean, fortunately, there was the beauty of the Grand Canyon and going to Martha's Vineyard in Maine, Cape Cod. And visiting my friends in Tennessee and the ones in Denver. I got to do a lot of traveling.
So why were you in Phoenix?
I was actually staying with my friends who live about 2 hours from Phoenix. And between all my travels, then I volunteered at an animal welfare shelter. So my experiences in the laundry at Beit Bart in Jerusalem washing mountains of laundry, stood me in good stead there, washing thousands of dog blankets and washing thousands of dog bowls and whatever.
Why were there so many dogs there?
It seems to be a growing problem in America. You know, a lot of people got animals during COVID to look after them, the same as they did all over the world. And now they can't either afford them or they've moved on and they're... So it's very sad that there are so many abandoned animals.
Very sad. And actually in Israel, what fascinated me was were all the wild cats.
Mm-hmm.
And then my daughter showed me how you could see which ones had been neutered. They had, as far as I remember, something on their ear, or and which I thought was a very good idea. You know, they were not sent off to be euthanized, but they were neutered. So there are cats everywhere. It drives a lot of people absolutely mad, I must admit.
But that again is, so when I asked my Jewish friends why there are so many wild cats, and again it's just a proof of how the Jewish people value life, that they won't even euthanize the stray cats. They would rather neuter them, because that's how much they value life. And so when you hear of these horror stories in Gaza of the IDF going in and indiscriminately murdering, especially when they talk about the children, no, that's not what happens at all. They are warned to get the women and children out. There's pamphlets dropped. There are those little knock-knock taps on the roofs of the building saying, evacuate, evacuate. And only then will they send the bombs. And it's not reciprocal. You don't see any little pamphlets coming or any warnings coming when the missiles are coming from Iran or Gaza or anywhere else in the world.
No, and they put out the IDF at great danger by warning that they are going in.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue, and I'm back with Denise Mortlock. And if you'd like to join our conversation, please WhatsApp us on 061-895-1019. Denise, I sent you a list of different questions, and they were you are responding to some of them now. But I wanted to ask you about our government saying that Israel is an apartheid state and that we are committing genocide in Israel. What are your feelings about it being an apartheid state? What did you witness when you were in Israel?
The apartheid that I saw is when I took a trip into the West Bank. I wanted to go to Bethlehem, I wanted to go to Jericho, I wanted to go to Nazareth, which my Jewish friends can't do. Because once you cross that IDF checkpoint and go through the wall, then you travel with a Palestinian tour guide. And there immediately you're faced with these huge red signs in Hebrew, in Arabic, in English, warning Israelis that their lives are in danger if they come into the West Bank. Or I didn't get the opportunity to go to Gaza. However, when you come the other way, there's none of those signs warning the Palestinians that they are going to be murdered if they come into Israel. So I was like, I'm not understanding where this apartheid is. I'm working with Palestinian people. Go to the old city of Jerusalem. Everyone is mingling with everybody else. We talk together. I just don't see where the apartheid is that these people are talking about. And then secondly, I don't think anybody understands the word. It's an Afrikaans word. And apartheid, the concept of keeping people apart, was actually introduced to South Africa by the British when they brought in the 1820s settlers to act as that buffer zone to keep the blacks out of entering the white area. So that concept of separate development or keeping people apart is actually an English idea, and the Afrikaans word is apartheid, just apartness or separateness, or however you want to translate it. So I think people who talk about apartheid need to go and see, read their history books and discover for themselves what the concept is and who developed it and what the word actually means before they bandy it about.
And maybe to try and go into Bethlehem and into Jericho and just see what happens to them. You know what, I think people are so naive about it, thinking that they're going to be welcomed wherever they are. It's definitely not the case. But on the other hand, in the hospitals, all the medical centers, it's so mixed. My daughter had her first baby in Israel, and she roomed in with a Muslim woman, and who was in a burqa and what have you. She had had twins. And in the nursery, before I left in the evening, I looked in, and there were all these little cots, bassinets, and filled with the little children of all different colors. And I must admit, I said a silent prayer there that they would grow up to know peace. And I still keep that prayer in my mind and on my lips, wishing that that would one day happen. But there was certainly, I came through apartheid nursing, and I know what apartheid really is in a medical center, in a medical situation. Would you like to go back?
Absolutely.
Tell me, I've asked you that already, but I want to know why.
I don't know. It's such an incredibly special place. And now that I have friends there who phone me regularly, we keep in touch regularly, asking me, when am I coming back? You need it here. You have to come back. So I don't know when I will go back. I would love to go back. As I said, I think we've said earlier about trying to help in the mental health arena now. Mm-hmm.
Why do you want to help in that particular arena? What do you feel? I mean, is it because of what's been happening with the war that's gone on for almost 2 years now?
And you know, that nation is so incredibly innovative with technology. I mean, their technology is on a different plane. But they're looking at different ways of dealing with, because it's not just the families of the hostages or the soldiers, or it's generational. It's from the smallest children to the oldest people who are suffering as a fallout of the October 7th horror. Mm-hmm. And that's what I learned in one of my best lessons, was how important family is. So each of those hostages is the child of anyone living in that country. It's not that they don't, even if they don't know them or they've never met them, it's that incredible family connection that we are suffering as much as if that child were our own child. And that you feel very strongly, and it's, you know, once they say you are part of the family, and in those letters, come back, come and visit, you're part of the family. I think even in the letter of invitation, it says that you become part of the family.
Mm.
And that, you know, that's such a privilege to be part of a Jewish family, because you're part of the nation, not just an individual family.
And definitely, there's a lot that goes into keeping the families together. I have found in the diaspora, as diaspora Jews, I can only talk for Johannesburg, but the connections have become so much stronger because people are helping each other, and unbelievable volunteer work within our community. And of course, you heard with the Dis-Chem Foundation on the outer community as well, you know, reaching out. It's absolutely amazing the work that's being done, even though as a people, as a South African Jews, we've been very hurt. I mentioned this often on my program, that we've been very hurt with the government, you know, taking us to the genocide court. But there was another letter that came through that for you, which said, "To whom it may concern, it is with great pleasure that I write this letter of recommendation for Denise Mortlock, who has been an invaluable volunteer at our assisted living Beit Bart over this past year. Denise's dedication, warmth, and unwavering willingness to help wherever needed have left a lasting impact on both the residents and staff. whether assisting in the kitchen, helping in the nursing department, accompanying residents to the hospital, preparing coffee in the lobby, or simply offering companionship and a listening ear, Denise carried out every task with kindness, patience, and a giving heart. Her presence brought comfort and joy to those around her, and her commitment to making a difference was evident in everything she did. Denise is truly exceptional as a volunteer, and we are deeply grateful for the time and energy she has devoted to Bait Part. We have no doubt that she will continue to bring the same level of care, love, and compassion to any endeavor she chooses to pursue. Sincerely, Shelva Ross, social worker. You're laughing at that, but that's the most beautiful letter of recommendation. And I'm being told we're going to advert.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue, and I'm back with Denise Mortlock, and our time is going very quickly. You know, just listening to that about Joel Stransky, whenever I watch the rugby team playing, and they all stand together, I've said this before, but it just moves my heart when I see them all standing and they are singing their anthem, our anthem. And I had Professor Zeidel Rudolph, who was part of writing the anthem, was here in my studio, in our studio a few weeks ago. And I was saying to her that when I see them all with their arms around each other and everyone in the stadium, all singing with great excitement, it moves my heart. It really does. It's like when I hear Hatikva as well being played. But, you know, I wanted to say this. Martin Luther King Jr. said, life's most persistent and urgent question is, what are you doing for others? And I came across this story. It says, Anton was a Jewish baker, once the owner of one of Germany's most beloved bakeries. When people asked how he had managed to survive the Holocaust, he would share a story that revealed both courage and compassion. It began on a train bound for Auschwitz, where he and countless others were packed into freezing wagons without food, water, or coats. Snow fell outside and death loomed in the bitter cold. Among the prisoners was an elderly man who trembled uncontrollably in the night. Anton, though frozen himself, used his hands to rub warmth into the man's arms, face and legs. He spoke to him, encouraged him, and held him very close until morning. When daylight broke, Anton made a heartbreaking discovery. Everyone else in the wagon had perished in the cold. Only he and the old man were still alive, kept alive by the warmth they had shared. Reflecting on this moment, Anton would explain the lesson he carried all his life. The secret of survival is to warm the hearts of others. When you give warmth, you receive warmth. When you help someone live, you too will live. It was a truth forged in the darkest of times, a reminder that humanity's strength lies in compassion. And as a volunteer, I think that's something that you've definitely got to go in with. That compassion, whether it's for humans or for animals, it's obviously in your soul. And what are any of your friends interested in joining you going to Israel? or your family?
Like, are you crazy? You know, they did everything they could to discourage me. And when that attack came from Iran, sitting on those steps with those just amazing ladies, I mean, I could fortunately run up and down the stairs and go and get blankets off my bed and wrap it around them in their wheelchairs or whatever. But sitting with them and these huge bangs going on and the windows rattling and they're sharing some chocolate with me and they're like, shall we go and get some yogurt? And Shalva, who wrote that letter, she phoned and said, Denise, where are you and are you okay and where can't you? And I was like, Shalva, if I get blown to, it will be an absolute pleasure to be sitting with these remarkable women in Jerusalem. So it's, and you cannot outgive God. So the more you give, the more you will get. Not that you're going to go and give 1,000 rand and get 10,000 rand, but you can never give enough love, compassion, share your skills. And especially us at our age, I'm talking about myself, we have got so much to share. At this time of life, most women are thinking, oh, that's the end of me, I've got nothing to share. No, your life's wisdom, and it doesn't matter if you're washing dishes or you're washing dog bowls or you're feeding someone who can't feed themselves. You have got so much more to give than the younger generation who just don't have the time anymore. With wisdom, with age comes wisdom and patience. And that's
what a wonderful message, Denise, honestly, and especially as we're going towards our New Year, Rosh Hashanah. I just send much love and pray for peace. And how would you like to end?
Shalom, shalom, shalom.
Ah, that's beautiful. Thank you, Denise. Thank you, Craig. Thank you, Peterson.